now tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. You are tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation, and I am your host, Commissioner Gordon. I'd like to welcome you in and say thank you for tuning in. This episode, as always, is brought to you by my good friend at Greenwood Whiskey. Greenwood Whiskey is now damn near everywhere. They're also online. Check them out at Greenwood Whiskey. Where do I start this weekend, man? Everything happened. Like, this is, you guys just don't stop. I mean, just when I think I don't have anything to talk about, I look up and I have a million damn stories to talk about. So what I'll do, I'll start with a good one. Let's go to the NBA first. We'll start there. In the NBA, as I told you guys last week, training camp started around Thursday, where they had individual workouts. They had the media show up. Everyone's taking pictures. Everyone's practicing. It's almost like orientation, getting to know your team. You know, you got your guys coming in, your new players, your new coaches. Everyone's kind of getting acclimated. They bring the media in, and they talk to the players. And the media makes certain players accessible. And the rest just go out and just do your job. Well, for the Houston Rockets, they were doing something similar, you know, going through the motions of that. They have a new coach, Steven Silas. Shouts out to him. He's the son of one Paul Silas. If you know Paul Silas, then you know Paul Silas was a damn good coach. And I hope that his son, Steven, falls in that same vein. But they're doing this. They got the team together. And everyone's around. Everyone's in Houston. They're doing their thing. And you look around, and guess who you don't see? You would be right. You don't see one Mr. James Harden. Well, where was James Harden, that you would ask? I'm glad you asked. James Harden was between here in Atlanta and Las Vegas, kicking it with Lil Baby for his 26th birthday party. Yes. Now, typically, you go to a party, you might give a gift, and then you dip up out of there, and then you go back to doing what you got to do. But I think that he traveled, because they have several reports of saying that he was in Vegas. There's several reports saying that he was in Atlanta, and I know for a fact that Lil Baby was in both places. So James is traveling with Lil Baby as a part of the birthday celebration. And as a part of this birthday celebration, James Harden gives Lil Baby a $100,000 Prada bag because, in his words, I'm sorry, in his words, he was proud of him. It sounds like a corny joke. Man, I can't make this stuff up. But that's what he said. He was proud of him. So he gave him a Prada bag. $100,000 Prada bag. Also, when Lil Baby opened this Prada bag, it was full of honey buns. Right? You're like, what? Honey buns? Lil Baby like honey buns? Well, he liked this honey bun because this honey bun was essentially $100,000. Now, if you don't know what's going on in these streets, honey bun is a term for $100,000. Honey bun, honey bundles. See what I'm saying? See where this is going? Yes, inside the honey buns was a honey bun. Right. Once again, I can't make this stuff up, man. It sounds like a corny joke, but I'm not the one standing at the microphone. I mean, I am, but you get it. Right. Also, he gave Lil Baby about a $100,000 Richard Mille watch. I'm assuming that's how you say it. Richard Mille. I'm assuming that's how you say it. I don't know. I'm broke. I don't have $100,000 on my wrist. So if it ain't Richard Mille, if Reese is looking at me, I don't know. I don't hear enough rappers talking about Richard Mille. So if that's not how you say it, damn it, I don't care. But yes, he gave him a $100,000 watch. $300,000 in gifts. Like, I got a lot of friends, dog. Like, whoo. So needless to say, I have sent one Mr. James Harden RSVP to my next birthday party, hoping that he is proud of me and letting him know that I too like honey buns. Yes, let's see how quickly he responds to my RSVP invite. But yeah, he's not there, and I have word that today is Tuesday, December 8th, he did arrive at camp today, though, and he got there, and he performed all procedures. He got COVID tested. He did everything the way that they asked him to after kicking it in Vegas and Atlanta with Lil Baby. But if you do know James Harden has also stated that he wants to be traded from the Rockets. And, I mean, people often gloss over the reason why. I think the most consistent reason that I can see why is because he stated at one point in time that the Rockets owner was a huge supporter of Trump, a huge contributor of Trump, and he did not think that he wanted to play for someone who stood for many of the things that Donald Trump stood for, which is you know, kind of admirable. You know what I'm saying? I can understand that. I don't know if that's the reason why you want to be traded, but yes, Reese. But he said he didn't know. Yes, James Harden is also the dude that when they returned to the bubble, when the NBA shut down during the COVID, they returned to the bubble, and upon their return, James Harden had the Blue Lives Matter mask. He later turned around and said that he didn't know what it was for. I guess he thought it was just a cool looking mask. He put it over, but it in turn was a salute to the police department, of which at that point the flames were high because police were killing black folks everywhere. So yeah, they were killing black folks everywhere. So I don't know if, you know, if that, how true that is. That's going back to the owner of the Rockets support Trump and he wants out because of it. I don't know how true that is. I do know that he wants out. He's vocally stated that he wants out, to the point of, I think he tried to go to Brooklyn. He tried to line himself up with Kyrie and KD in Brooklyn. And I don't know how that's going to work, because if they pay in Kyrie, if they're paying KD and they're paying James Harden, that's your team. You don't have any money to pay anybody else. You got a team full of janitors. If you got KD, Kyrie, and James Harden, somebody got to go. But he also has stated that he would like to be in Philly or any other contender, which, you know, that's cool. But if you go to Philly, one of those guys, once again, one of those guys have to go. Ben Simmons would have to leave. Joel Embiid would have to leave. You can't have all three. It's not going to be a simple just plug in James Harden. That's not going to work. My question is, if he's so damn cool with Lil Baby, why Lil Baby can't talk, bring your ass to Atlanta? I mean, you say, what does he have to do with him coming to the Hawks? Hey, what's your boy name? Quavo kind of talked the Hawks into drafting Trae Young. He politicked for Trae Young to come to Atlanta. I mean, I'm pretty sure they were going to draft him anyway. They were going to make that move anyway. But Quavo being on the scene, you know, championing him, you know, like he was the drum major of the, you know, of the leading the cheers for Trae to come to Atlanta. And then them kicking it, you know, you can see them at different spots kicking it. So they're cool. Lil Baby can get his partner in there too. Bring James Harden in. And I mean, even though we just signed Gallinari, we just signed Bogdanovich, I'd get rid of both of them. You both, y'all can go. Don't get too comfy. Don't put your bag down just yet. Y'all on the next thing going out to Houston. I'd take both of them, send them to Houston. I would probably give you John Collins. John Collins can bounce too. And maybe a future first round pick. I don't know how this stacks up. I haven't done the math. I don't know how this stacks up money wise, but I mean, just doing numbers in my head, it would be close. I might have to throw in another scrub or two, but it would be close. So yeah, I mean, let's work on that. Get the beard and the A. We got strip clubs. Hell, we got the best strip club. Also, sticking to the NBA, I told you that James Harden was interested in going to Brooklyn. Well, Brooklyn has already started having their own sets of problems with one Mr. Kyrie Irving. And I'm going to go out on the record right now and say, for as many people who think this Kyrie and KD situation is going to be great, I don't believe it's going to be that peachy. Like, on paper, if we were playing 2K, I think it's a dope squad. But I always tell everyone, Kyrie is a different animal. Like, Kyrie was the guy who sat here and argued with us for like 2 or 3 months that the earth was flat. Yeah, he did that. Kyrie is also the guy, while a part of the Boston Celtics, who did not talk to his teammates for 28 days consecutively during the season. You know how hard that is? To not talk to somebody for 28 days? You gotta try. Like, you have to make an effort. I don't know how mad somebody could make me that I would just not speak to you. I can see you on the plane. I can see you on the bus, in the hotel, at shoot around, at film sessions. I could see you, not just one person. He didn't talk to a damn soul. Like, he might have talked to the coach. You know what I'm saying? He might have talked to the trainer. He got to talk to the trainer, because if something hurts, you got to talk to the trainer. But you didn't talk to your teammates for 28 days. It takes a special kind of guy to do that. That's conviction. Like, you. So, I don't see this just being the greatest thing in Brooklyn. I don't see it. You know what I'm saying? Also, Kevin Durant has shown you that he will bounce. If it ain't going his way, all right, I'm out of here. He'll dip. So if Kyrie tries to pull any of these shenanigans in Brooklyn, KD will play out the season, and then he'll either demand a trade or he'll opt out. I don't think he signed a very long contract, so he wouldn't be held for a very long time. I don't have the contract in front of me, like I said. But what happened this week, I told you earlier about the Houston Rockets. Everyone, it happened around the league. Media week. It's media week. It's comeback. You're practicing. Orientation. You talk to the media. The media ask questions. How do you feel about being here? Kyrie was one of those guys who was assigned to speak to the media. But what Kyrie did was opted out. Kyrie did not speak to the media. Kyrie instead sent a statement to the media. Basically, the statement said, instead of speaking to the media today, I am issuing this statement to ensure that my message is properly conveyed. I'm committed to show up to work every day, ready to have fun and compete and perform and win championships alongside my teammates and colleagues in the Nets organization. He would go on in that statement to say that COVID-19 has impacted us all in many ways. So I pray for the safety and health of our communities, domestically and abroad. I am truly excited for this season to start, and I'm also praying that everyone remains safe and healthy throughout this journey. My goal this season is to let my work on and off the court speak for itself. Life hit differently this year, and it requires me to move differently. So this is the beginning of that change. Now that is what I want to focus on. Life hit differently this year, and it requires me to move differently. And this is the beginning of that change. What does that mean? Because this can't be your I'm afraid of COVID speech. It can't be. You know why? Because if you're afraid of COVID and you don't want to talk to the media, guess what you can do? You can go to the next room. They have a microphone. They have a camera. And you can answer questions where you could see the reporters and they can see you. You can't just say, I'm afraid of COVID, and then not talk to anybody. You can't say that. They do it when they're not even in the same building. I see players all the time. Finish the game, put on a headset, look into a camera, look into a television or a monitor, and talk to people back here in Atlanta on NBA TV, talk to people back here in Atlanta on TNT, and conduct the interview, and they're able to ask questions. But you can't sit out and say, this is the beginning of me moving differently. Meaning, I'm not going to answer questions from the media. That ain't what's happening in these streets. No. Because what you're doing essentially is now you're going to put that weight on your teammates. Your teammates are going to have to be the one to answer for you. So if you come out and you make a bad decision, you make a bad turnover, a terrible shot, you blow the game, you get into it with another teammate, official, whatever. Your teammates are ultimately going to be held responsible for speaking about you, because they can't speak for you, but they'll be asked to speak about you. And guess what? That is going to get old real fast, because it won't be long before there's tension in the locker room. Let Kevin Durant have to continuously answer questions about what Kyrie was doing, what Kyrie was thinking. Why didn't Kyrie do this? Why didn't Kyrie do that? Let him have to keep answering those questions about Kyrie and not about the game itself, or not about Kevin Durant. Let's see how long he stick around, or let's see how long he plays it cool before he says something to Kyrie. You understand what I'm saying? You're isolating your teammates and putting them in a bad position, and that's going to spill over to the play on the floor. Thus, I don't think they're going to be a contender, because they have the talent. Like, you got the talent, and you're not going to mess that up. We saw what Brooklyn was able to do without Kyrie and KD. They were in a lot of games in the bubble. They put up a hell of a fight. You could see Dinwiddie. You could see a bunch of these guys had an enormous amount of talent. And then you add Kyrie and KD, and the talent goes through the roof, and they're going to be there because of that talent. But what's going to trip them up is going to be the fact that Kyrie is doing things like this and isolating himself and separating himself from the others. And that's not going to yield positive results. Because it's already happened to the point where Kyrie, on a podcast with KD, I think it was Kyrie's podcast, and they essentially talked back and forth and both agreed that Steve Nash ain't the damn coach. Kind of like we all controlling the team. You know, it's like, you know, kind of like it's both ours. He just take the pitcher in the suit. You know what I'm saying? That ain't... So that was one for me when they elected Steve Nash as head coach and then announced on the podcast, whatever the name of his podcast is, that, you know, I don't really see him as the coach. What the hell do you see him as? We hired him as the coach. So if you don't respect him as the coach, Steve Nash has already hired Mike D'Antoni as an assistant to help run the team. Well, guess what? Mike D'Antoni couldn't help run the team in Houston. That's the reason why his ass don't have a job. Mike D'Antoni is the one who basically has stated that a lot of the players run over him because he does not like confrontation. Meaning, he doesn't like doing his job. He doesn't like seeing a problem and saying we have to fix this. Because to fix it, a lot of times, you got to sit there and talk to someone and confront someone. If I see that you're isolating a player and you're not passing the ball to an open guy, I have to confront you to say, hey, you've got to do this. If I see that you're making turnovers, I have to confront you to say, hey, you have to stop with this. If I see that you're making bad decisions and taking bad shots, I have to talk to you to say, hey, you have to do this. It's coaching. It's teaching. It's part of the job. So we've already told you we don't give a damn about Steve Nash. He hired somebody that doesn't like confrontation. So ultimately, the job of handling all this stuff is going to fall on Jock Vaughn, who, guess what? Should have gotten the job when it was posted on the wall. He was the guy they skipped over so they could give this job to Steve Nash. So now he's got to be the disciplinarian. Now he's got to be the coach. Because everybody doesn't like the coach. You're not supposed to always like the coach, because the coach is trying to push you to get better. The coach is trying to get you to make better decisions for the team, not for the individual. So everybody's not going to always like the coach. There was always rumors of Larry Brown and Allen Iverson going back and forth and getting into it. But if you go back and you check some of these podcasts, like All the Smoke with Captain Jack and Matt Barnes, Allen Iverson will sit there and he will tell you that he loved Larry Brown because Larry Brown pushed him. He didn't pat his back. He didn't say it'd be okay. He didn't just let you do what you wanted to do. He tried to make you a better basketball player. So no, I do not think that this is going to be Brooklyn just walking the red carpet into the NBA Finals. I don't. Yes, they have the talent, but yes, they will have problems. And that brings me into a segment I like to call I Told Y'all. In this segment, I told y'all. First of all, let me go back. Scratch that. This segment, I told y'all. I want my producer, engineer, Reese Boogie, to hit my intro. It's time.
four.
Yeah, all right. You was right, I was wrong.
I told y'all, y'all better believe it.
Okay, I would like to say, because I was just reminded about this because I was talking about James Harden earlier, that I told y'all that this James Harden thing with Russell Westbrook wasn't going to work. You have two guards that needed the ball, two guards that were used to doing whatever they wanted to do while handling the ball. And James Harden is a better distributor, I believe, in my opinion, than Russell Westbrook. And he kind of showed you. He still got his numbers. He still did his thing. But I told you this wouldn't work. And it is ultimately turned into Russell Westbrook being sent to the Washington Wizards for John Wall. Now, I don't see that working well either, because you swap the pan and for a skillet. You essentially got the same thing. You know what I'm saying? You essentially got a ball-centric point guard, and the only way it'll work is if John Wall is willing to take a back seat and doesn't see himself as the guy. If he's willing to come in, get the assist, work, take the open shots when it's given to him, and try to get other guys better, then it'll work. But that hasn't been John Wall's game, so I don't see it changing to being John Wall's game. The team out in Washington hated him. They hated him. No one liked playing with him. So I don't think he's going to magically become a better teammate just because he switched locations. But like I said, for Russell Westbrook and James Harden, I told y'all, man. Also, in the I told y'all section, and I said going into this that I wanted to keep the COVID talk to a minimum because I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of talking about COVID. I already said, you know, the thing about Kyrie and how he feels about, you know, COVID and being in the room with a bunch of media. But I told you guys that COVID will impact the NCAA championship, the college football championship. And here we go. It's happening. What has happened, you say? Well, Michigan has had to cancel its game versus Ohio State this weekend due to high COVID numbers. How does that impact the game? I mean, Michigan stinks. Well, Michigan was set to play Ohio State this weekend. And as it stands right now, if Ohio State doesn't play Michigan, which they won't because the game has already been canceled, they'll only have 5 games played. Well, the Big Ten, going into this, when they joined and decided to get back into the college football race, the Big Ten decided that you had to have at least 6 games played to be a part of the Big Ten Championship. And if you're not a part of the Big Ten Championship, more than likely, the championship committee for the national championship won't put you in the Final Four. And I call it the Final... I call it the Final Four because that's what it is. I know it's for basketball, but whatever. But they won't put you in the Final Four. Coincidentally, this will be the first time that the two schools have not faced each other in over 100 years, in about 100 years. I don't think it's over. I think it's right at 100 years. But that would only, like I said, it only leave Ohio State with 5 regular season games. And I told you that this, before, when the Big Ten set it up and they said they were going to play football and they released all the schedules and they were playing conference-only schedules and I looked at the schedules, I sat here and told you that this was set up for Ohio State to have a cakewalk in to the national championship, or at least the Final Four. They set it up. But now it looks like Ohio State won't get a chance to do that. So, what they're gonna try to do is they're gonna try to find another game. Like, I've heard rumors of them trying to, whatever's happened with Maryland. I don't know if Maryland has a bye week or whatever, or they or their opponent has COVID and can't perform. But they talked about Maryland. They talked about them playing Indiana again, because I think Indiana was supposed to play Purdue, and Purdue has high COVID numbers. But that would be dumb, because you just played Indiana. Like, literally just played Indiana. Or they just break the rule. And if you don't see me, I'm using air quotes on rule of you have to have six games, and they'll just slide Ohio State in with five. Which, that's what I think they'll do, personally. Barry Alvarez, former head coach, Wisconsin AD, and chairman of the return of Big Ten football, has basically already alluded to the fact that the rule could be, and I'm using air quotes again, the rule could be revisited. That was his statement. The rule could be revisited. So they're going to do whatever they can do to get Ohio State in this Final Four tournament at the end of the season. Long story short, they're going to be there. But back to the point I was making before, I told y'all this was happening. I did. I told you it was going to happen. And I think it's going to happen more. I'm still waiting for a team to have the effect similar to what the Broncos had when they couldn't play a quarterback because all the quarterbacks had either been exposed to COVID or were tested positive for COVID. But I told y'all.
Commissioner Gordon.
I got another one for you. Did you see the one where the kid attacked the referee? Yeah, I let that sink. He's like, what? The kid attacked the ref. Okay, so what happened? Edinburgh High School is playing a playoff game in Texas. And a player, I think his name is Emmanuel Duran, he gets ejected from the game. I think he had a late hit on the quarterback, and then he had some words with the lineman and the official, of which the referee threw two flags, both personal fouls, and ejected young Emmanuel from the game. After he ejects young Emmanuel from the game, the young man, who's already at this point in time on the sideline, he sprints to the referee. The referee is located in the middle of the field, and you can see a coach coming in trying to take an angle to stop him, and a player who looks like an offensive lineman who just isn't fast enough to keep up with him is trying to tell him, hold on, wait, don't, where are you going? Hold on, wait. But it's too late. Young Emmanuel Duran upends the 55-year-old referee. And if I'm not talking about, I say young Emmanuel, it sounds like you probably get an image of a small young man. No. This kid is 225 pounds. I'm sorry, I said the referee was 55-year-old. The referee was 59-year-old referee. He blindsided. Yes. He upends the ref, like takes off and lays the ref out like the ref had on pads and a football in his hand. Like cartoon-like. It was like you could literally see the ref lifted up in the air, turn to the side, and then people start to come around him to try to get him away from the referee. And as it turned out, like, the state, I'm assuming. I don't know who pressed charges, but charges had been pressed. He is charged with a Class A assault this past Friday morning, and he had a cash bond of $10,000 set for his bail. And I'm greeting this with mixed emotions, because there was one side saying, oh, don't do this to the kid, you could ruin his life, he's a young man, and one terrible decision could ruin his life. And on the other side, you had people saying, that's assault. That's essentially the very definition of assault. You had a 59-year-old man standing there doing his job. He didn't even see you coming. He was looking at the play that was about to take place. He's going on with his job. He's throwing you out the game. He's assuming that you're walking to the locker room, or a coach is walking you to the locker room, and he's focused on the line play that's about to take place. He's probably about to wind the clock. And here you come, full speed, out of nowhere. Bam! That's assault. But the first thing I thought about when I saw this was, somebody needs to test this kid for steroids. Because that looked, to me, it looked like roid rage. It did. It just, that was the first thing I thought of. I've been around, in some of my football playing days, I've been around a few people who I've known were taking supplements or taking steroids, and they would lash out like that every so often, to where they couldn't control themselves. And let me do this to further the impact of young Emmanuel. He was also last year's Defensive Player of the Year. So it ain't like we got no scrub hitting this 60 year old man. This is a world-class athlete. But, like I said, when I first saw it, I thought of steroids. And if it's not steroids, then this kid has serious anger management problems. Serious anger management problems. That somebody needs to check now. And if you don't give him this, if you don't give him this Class A assault, then what does that tell him? What does that do? Like, I don't, what does that do for him in the molding and the shaping of him becoming a young man? And I'm trying to stay away from the obvious race discussion, because just looking at a picture of Deron, I don't know what his descent is. He could be Hispanic. He could be Hispanic. I'm sorry. He could be Polynesian. I don't know. But I know if this was a young black kid, if this is Emmanuel Jackson, then they would have thrown the book at him. I'll just say that. And I'll back away from the race card. You know, I'll throw the bomb in the building and then back away. But he could be white. I don't know. He could be. I don't know. But this had to go, and this had to be checked. So I have mixed feelings. I agree with one of the sides saying, no, you don't want to mess up his life. But I also, I'm leaning more on the, hey man, something need to be done. You got to punish this kid, and you let him know that this don't fly in the real world. Mm-mm. That ain't what's happening. So check out the story, watch the video, and then go to at G Robinson Sports, which is my Twitter. Let me know what you think. Go to at the.commissioner.gordon and let me know what you think. The next one, I'm just going to talk real quickly about this because this really, this isn't worth a whole lot of my time. So last week we talked about we talked about Roy Jones and Mike Tyson. We talked about Nate Robinson and Jake Paul. And lo and behold, smelling the money, Money Mayweather shows up. Like, yeah, I want in on this. But who does he fight? He doesn't go in to try to avenge Nate Robinson by fighting Jake Paul. He goes and gets Jake Paul's brother, Logan Paul, who's also a YouTuber. You know, and I don't know what they do on YouTube. I haven't watched. I don't care. They got millions of followers, though, so somebody like them. I've been told they make music and do different other little skits, whatever. But Logan Paul says he's looking to make history on February 20th. He thinks he can take down the champ. Logan Paul is 0-1 as a professional boxer. Let that be known. Yeah, let that be known. Quotes from Logan Paul says, think about it. This would be the greatest upset in the history of sports ever. Ever. He emphasizes it. He says it twice. It is a win-win situation. It doesn't even matter what effing happens. That's what Paul said on his podcast. He also says, but you can bet your ass I'm going for the knockout. He wants to knock out Money May. Okay, good luck with that. He said, if I knock him out, they would talk about this for the next 1,000 years. I can't believe that Floyd took this fight. I can't effing believe that Floyd took this fight. Floyd Money Mayweather. You want to know why Floyd took that fight? Floyd saw those pay-per-view numbers. And if you've ever followed Floyd throughout his career, Floyd has been all about those pay-per-view numbers, because you know what happens when those pay-per-view numbers go up? Yep, that's right. Dollars go up. So if you tell Floyd that about 5 million people were watching Tyson and Roy Jones, he multiplied that by 50. Because that's what it took to get the fight. That's what it took to get the fight on your screen. $50. And Floyd saw those numbers. And it was like Mr. Krabs. I don't know if you ever watched SpongeBob. When they started talking money, dollar signs pop up in Mr. Krabs' eye. Bloop. That's Floyd. That's why he took this job. That's why he took that fight. The kid will be bigger than Floyd. Like, I think he's weighing in somewhere around 199, right around 200 pounds. And usually Floyd, you know, goes right at around $140, $150, somewhere around in there. All I can say, man, is good luck to you, kid, because many more skillful men have tried and none have succeeded, by the big fat goose egg in the loss column would implicate. So Logan Paul, good luck, buddy. I won't even come on here and tell you that I told y'all that this dude wouldn't beat Floyd Mayweather. I won't even come on here and say that. So I'll just give you that one for free.
Commissioner Gordon.
Let's move on to the NFL. Yeah, man. Look, back in the I told y'all realm again. Once again, I am 9-5 in my picks. I gave you 9 winners and took 5 L's. And it would have been 4 if the damn Bears don't stink it up. You know what I'm saying? It would have been 4. I say 9-5 because as of right now, the Cowboys and the Ravens are playing. So I don't know what that outcome would be or what the outcome is going to be. I haven't even really even looked at the score to see what it was. So, oh, never mind. 10-5. I'm looking right now. I just pulled it up on my computer. As of right now, it's the fourth quarter, 7 minutes left to play. The Ravens are up 27-10. And yes, I picked Baltimore. 10-5. I told y'all, man, and I told y'all a long time ago, I picked these winners. I just picked these winners, man. I'm not going to encourage anyone out here to bet. Never do that. But I can damn sure tell you who will win the game. But in news around the NFL, one, we'll go here. The Jets fired defensive coordinator Greg Williams. You know Greg Williams probably from his time at the Saints when they were issuing bounties and putting bounties on. How this dude still has a job, I don't know. Like, if you were the ringleader of a bounty gate, I would assume that you would be blackballed from the league. But apparently not. Apparently they just exile your ass over to the Jets. And you have to coach defense for the New York Jets. But what does Greg Williams do while he's at the Jets? Greg Williams is about to win the game. The Jets are ahead. It's like 13 seconds left. All they got to do is keep the Raiders out of the end zone. Game over. It's like third down. Keep them out of the end zone. Game over. This dude calls an all-out blitz. Cover zero. It ain't even help over the top. So if anybody gets beat, they just won. And that's what happened. It's man-to-man coverage over the side. Carr looks to the side, sees. Uh-oh. They're not. they're covering my receiver one-on-one. The receiver makes a kind of a double move. I wouldn't really consider it a double move, but he just makes an in, and then he pops back out onto the fade, and he got separation. Carr puts it up in the air. He catches the ball. Touchdown. Good night, Irene. The Raiders win 31-28. Yeah. So the end result turns out that they fire Greg Williams. And this is the crazy stuff about it. You fire Greg Williams, but everyone knows that the damn coach, Adam Gase, is going to be fired at the end of the year. So what difference did this? What difference did this one play make? Honestly. What difference was it between going 0-11 or being 1-11 and being 0-12? If anything, you ought to be praising him for doing you a favor. He's locking down that number one pick. He got you, folk. Oh, you thought we was going to win? No, buddy. Run a blitz. Don't put a safety anywhere on the field. Yep, there you go. Good job, Carr. Here we go. Trevor Lawrence. Tanking for trouble. But the NFL will have you believe there's no such thing. Like, he's essentially the fall guy for this. Because I saw it all over Twitter, all over social media, that they were continuously tanking and they were ensuring that they were going to get Trevor. And this was the way to do it. And so I guess that was the reason why he got fired, because we can't just have it just looking like we tanking out in these streets. So we got to let you go, Greg, but we appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah. He gets fired. You know who else got fired? Carson Wentz. Yeah, man. Carson Wentz been stanking it up pretty bad. He's been making a lot of turnovers, rushing a lot of throws. He hadn't been looking like his old MVP-esque self back in of a couple years ago when he was a young whippersnapper on the Philadelphia Eagles playoff run. Nah. So, essentially, like I said, he came out, he was there. They played the Green Bay Packers. And he's got turnovers. The team looks bad. And it's to the point where the team is looking so bad that I, not only just me, but apparently a lot of people were calling the question the head coach's play calling. You know, he was basically an innovator of sorts when they went on this playoff run, when they went on the Super Bowl run. So the kid was making turnovers. He's just, like I said, he's looking bad. Like, he's not looking like a good quarterback. And it's to the point where many people were questioning the play calling of Doug Peterson, because that Doug Peterson being Philly's head coach, they were questioning the play calling from Doug Peterson because it doesn't look as innovative as it did when they went to the Super Bowl, when they won the Super Bowl. It's kind of vanilla. It's kind of bland. And so what wound up happening during this game with the Green Bay Packers, they inserted Jalen Hurts. And Jalen Hurts came in, and it was like a shot of energy. It was like a shot, it's like a shot of a boost. It was a boost of energy. And he came in, and he made plays. He went down the field. He scored a touchdown. And that got team morale up. And what happened, he continued, like, he didn't even have to make plays, because that, it kind of permeated throughout the team. That whole optimism spread throughout the team. And what he did was, on one of the next drives, Green Bay kicks a punt, and there's a punt return for a touchdown. And so that got people to thinking, like, oh, maybe it's Jalen Hurts, and Jalen Hurts is the guy that we need. But I don't believe that that is the case. Like, personally, I've been talking to a lot of people, and I've been telling them the same thing. Like, Jalen Hurts can possibly, he can possibly help the coaching staff be innovative, because maybe they have more faith in his athleticism than they do with the kind of nicked up Carson Wentz. So maybe that helps. Also, maybe they would call plays to where, and emphasize throwing it away, sliding, to where Hurts would not be having as many turnovers as Wentz. But that's about it. Like, that's it. They don't have any receivers. Like, he didn't come with any extra receivers. Like, they have Miles Sanders, but Miles Sanders is pretty, he's hurt a lot. He didn't come with any extra running backs. He didn't come with any extra linemen. You don't get Jalen and, you know, this miraculous offensive line. So while, yes, you can see what Jalen has, and you can possibly see what you want to do in the future in regards to whether you want to keep Wentz or you want to trade him. But essentially that, like, the Eagles still are going to be 3-8-1 as of right now. Looking at their schedule coming up, they got New Orleans. I don't see them winning that one. They got Arizona at Arizona. I don't really see them winning that one. They got Dallas at Jerry World. They could win that one. And they host the Washington football team. They could win that one. But they lost to Washington the first game of the season. So it's not a lock. So what you're expecting to happen with Jalen Hurts coming in as a QB is probably not going to happen. You're not ripping off four straight victories. The best that you can hope for is to go 2-2. And I don't know if you keep him in the game. He would have to beat Arizona. Let's say you lose to New Orleans. You have to beat Arizona in hopes that he beats Dallas. And then from there. So I don't see it happening. I don't see four victories just because you inserted Jalen Hurts. At best, 2-2. I'm saying 1-3. If they keep Hurts in the entire time for those four games. So since I am sitting here and I'm predicting games, I might as well go through the entire week. So let's do that right now.
Commissioner Gordon.
All right, let's start this thing off right. First game, Thursday. Thursday night football is back. I know you guys missed it. How do I know you guys missed it? Because it was all up and down my timeline, how everybody had their memes talking about, oh, damn, I thought it was Thursday night football. What do you do when there's no Thursday night football? I got myself ready all day, been thinking about Thursday night football, and get here, ain't no damn football. I saw it. But Thursday night football, the New England Patriots face the Los Angeles Rams in Inglewood, California. I am going to go with the Rams. The Atlanta Falcons also go out to Inglewood, California, and they take on the Chargers. I'm picking the Chargers. I just am. I don't have to explain it. Don't look at me like that, damn it. The Chicago Bears host the Houston Texans. I'll give the Bears one more shot. They blew it last week. You know what? No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm going with Houston. I'm going with Houston. I like the Houston Texans over the Bears. Let me say it definitively. I like Houston over the Bears. The Dallas Cowboys. I like Dallas over Cincinnati. I like the Chiefs over the Dolphins. Give me the Cardinals over the Giants. I'm not sold on that. Trust me. Give me the Buccaneers over the Vikings. I'll take Carolina over Denver. Tennessee over Jacksonville. Give me the Raiders over the Indianapolis Colts. I'll take Seattle over the Jets. Give me Green Bay over Detroit. I already told you I like the Saints over the Eagles. You know what? I think they got something going. Give me the Washington football team over San Francisco. And, ooh, been waiting all day for Sunday night. The Steelers take on the Buffalo Bills at Buffalo. Give me the Steelers based off the fact that they just lost. And I know Coach has cracked the whip and will have them ready to face the Bills. So I'll take Pittsburgh. And then give me the Ravens over the Browns. Yes, give me the Ravens over the Browns for Monday night. So there you have it. Another Commissioner's Conversations in the books. I am your host, Commissioner Gordon. I thank you. Thank you for tuning in. I thank my people at Greenwood Whiskey. Salute to you. Get your 2 bottles. If you go to the store and they don't have Greenwood Whiskey, ask for it, demand it. Tell them they better get their stuff together or you will no longer shop there if they don't have Greenwood Whiskey. Yes, it's that serious. But I thank you. Thank you for tuning in. I thank you for listening. I'd like to thank my partners at Coffee and Kush Brand. Salute to them. What up, BG? And I'd like to thank my producer and engineer, Young Reese Boogie. Salute to you, good sir, for making me sound good, for keeping the music tight, keeping the music right. And again, I thank you, the audience. Until next week, I'll holla.
Okay, bye.